Hello, and welcome to Community Focus, KCBC's weekly public affairs program that covers the issues that matter to you and your community. I'm your host, John Yazel, and I'll be here every week at the same time on KCBC to speak with the experts and people who know about the issues and events that make a difference in our lives. And I thank you for joining me. If you have a question or comment for me, or would like to hear a topic covered on the show, you can always contact me via email at communityfocus@crawfordbroadcasting.com. That's communityfocus@crawfordbroadcasting.com. Or you can also go online to 770kcbc.com and click on the Community Focus link at the top of the page. And if you stay with me, I'll give you the mailing address at the end of the show. Community Focus starts now on KCBC. Well, last week, if you tuned in, you heard part one of an interview with Marilyn Bardet of Venetians for a Safe and Healthy Community. We discussed what her group is doing to try to stop an expansion by the Valero refinery in Benicia to refine more of these, what they call fracked oils, Bakken crude, tar sands oil, and also the safety involved of shipping this oil into California for refinement by rail. This is happening already with little or no regulation by the federal government or local state governments, and this group is trying to be at the forefront of raising awareness of how dangerous shipping this oil by train is and how it is going to possibly affect everyone in California if a major derailment happens like the one in Quebec, Canada last year that killed 47 people. So here's part two of that interview with Marilyn on Community Focus. So, Marilyn, let's talk now about the rail infrastructure that seems to be the real safety issue in the state of California. I mean, besides the fact that we're talking about mile-long trains of oil tankers that are carrying this substance that can explode at, say, 80 degrees, if I did some of my research properly. Mm-hmm. The biggest issue of these rail cars is the cars themselves, these DOT 111s. Now, these are old and not safe for transporting oil. Can you explain what the deal is with these things? Because most people out there don't understand most of the things we're talking about, so we got to break it down into layman's terms for them. So what's the real safety issue with these guys?
Well, just to give a description of the DOT 111s in the vernacular, that is, and how people in the industry have described them privately, probably amongst themselves, and certainly workers who are exposed to the dangers of these cars should there be a derailment. They're like beer cans. They were never designed according to the Transportation Safety Board, which sent out warnings as early as 1976 that these cars are vulnerable to puncture when they derail. And at that time, there wasn't much oil being transported by rail then. We've had, for many years, transporting by DOT 111s, we've had LPG, liquefied gases, petroleum gases, being transported by those tank cars that you often see. But they have been mixed up with in freight trains that we call manifest trains, trains that are composed of cars with mixed freight. You know, you could have corn in one and cars, and
right,
you could have,
and
some tank cars of LPG. So we're used to seeing that, but what we're not used to seeing, especially in California yet, are huge what they call unit trains, 100-car unit trains carrying crude oil.
So nothing
That's
but
very
oil.
Different. And these DOT 111s were never designed to, now they're admitting, never designed to carry crude oil.
Wow, so they weren't built right in the first place, and now they're carrying a substance that they were never designed to hold.
Exactly, and especially as they've discovered, you know, after the fact, the dangers of Bakken crude. Now, the industry has such a push to get that stuff out by rail, they've allowed it to go on. The federal government has been, you know, behind the eight ball. I mean, they have not caught up with the problem because Bakken crude is explosive. It can self-ignite under pressure in those cars, as has happened in Castleton, North Dakota, in Lac-Mégantic, Quebec. Last year, there have been 8 major derailments involving Bakken crude and tar sands in the last year. I could give the dates, but I think it's most important to realize that of the numbers of derailments that have occurred, 6 have involved Bakken, with explosive, catastrophic effects.
Why haven't there been any major reports on this in major news?
Well, there has been.
In our KPIX,
Channel 5 has done a pretty darn good job following what's been going on, at least in California and in the Bay Area, anticipating, showing video clips of what happened in North Dakota, and then talking about the potential for similar accidents and the threat to communities up and down rail in California should we have greater amounts of oil imported here. And that's what's expected.
Right.
They're expecting an enormous increase in the number of trains coming into California every day through these mountain gorges, Feather River Canyon, Donner Summit, and Shasta-Dunsmuir.
Right.
They expect approximately 8.8, let's call it 9, crude trains a day coming into California, and those are 100-car trains. Now, you imagine any spill or derailment in the Feather River Canyon or Donner Summit or Dunsmuir, and you got a disaster on your hands.
Right.
You could light the forest on fire.
Yeah, and if people don't recall, back in 1991, there was a major derailment. I think it was a pesticide that was spilled in Dunsmuir, and that area is still affected to this day. And we're talking, 25 years later. So if this was to happen and we're talking the same rail track. And when I was doing some of my research on this, it appears to me that the rail line, or the operator of that rail line in Dunsmuir, where this train derailed some time ago, they really haven't done any improvement to that track in the last 25 years. They kind of left it the way it was. Am I right about that?
Well, I don't know. I know they've done some repairs, but they can't straighten the rail.
Right.
I mean, the Dunsmuir situation is basically defined by geography. If you think of how the railroads in those days when they built these rail lines had to, it was treacherous work to build a rail with trestle bridges that go over canyons, as in the Feather River Canyon, or some of us certainly know Donner Summit and how the rail lines follow the ridges of the summit going above Donner Lake, and there are those snow sheds. I mean, picture a 100-car oil train going through Donner Summit, and you can imagine the tragedy, because these are now populated areas, too. We're not talking about rural areas in the middle of nowhere. We're talking beautiful landscapes, hugely precious to everyone, sources of water, watersheds, forests, everything valuable, and people, have treasure going up to the mountains and spending time in their cabins. And now, when I think of it, these trains threaten everybody's beloved vacation spots, et cetera. And I'm thinking also up in Shasta, the McLeod River, and, great fishing country. We're talking about accidents that should we see fires, et cetera, in our drought-stricken state.
It would be awful.
We don't have emergency response capable of handling as many kinds of incidents as these trains could pose every day to communities and sensitive ecologic areas.
Right, and especially because what seems to be happening is when one of these derailments happen, like the one that happened in the Kalamazoo River in Michigan, there wasn't much they could do when one of these happened?
What happened at Kalamazoo is a tributary of the Kalamazoo River was involved because a derailment of tar sand, it wasn't a derailment, excuse me, it was a pipeline, Enbridge pipeline rupture that caused a vast amount of oil, tar sands, to be spilled into ultimately the Kalamazoo River, contaminating 35-mile stretch of it. And EPA, when they went to try to clean up tar sands, what happens is the liquid that they use to dilute bitumen evaporates. So you get acute incident of releases of volatile organic compounds in the air of toxic emissions. But what happens is the bitumen sinks to the bottom of the river and sticks like tar to everything, ruining and destroying river bottoms and habitat for every kind of critter in the water.
Right.
And so when the EPA comes to try to clean up the Kalamazoo River, they find out it's nearly impossible unless they dredged it, and they have spent, through 2012, they spent $1 billion on that cleanup effort to clean the shoreline, et cetera, and it's still not cleaned up. And it's virtually impossible to clean up bitumen.
Right.
So locally, just to bring it home, we are concerned because we border the Suisun Bay and the Sassoon Marsh. And the marsh is within our city limits. And this beautiful marsh that is part of the Pacific Flyway, and with many, many kinds of birds and plants that are very vulnerable, are going to be threatened with oil trains coming through, such that if there is a derailment, we have no idea how anybody could clean up the marsh if there was tar sands involved, or if there was a major fire, how fire emergency response people would get out to that train track with any confidence that they can deal with this, because I have taken pictures of the marsh in February of 2011 where the marsh is pretty flooded after a major storm, and there's ponding everywhere, and you couldn't drive a truck through it to get to the tracks. And the few access roads that go out there, one was the city had to put a sign up saying flooded, and it, you could see that the dirt road was underwater. So I really don't see that an emergency plan, a typical emergency plan that they have in place, would address those kinds of catastrophes, potential right. catastrophes. And by the way, it's very hard to get Valero or the city to discuss credible worst-case scenarios in our town. And we are trying to raise that question through the environmental review we're going through now. And I'd like to say just another thing about our when you talked about rail and how the rail lines are, whether they're maintained and upgraded, et cetera, Union Pacific has been working on upgrading their lines in our area, including in our industrial park. But the main Union Pacific line sort of borders the marsh, goes right through the marsh, and then the trains have to back into our industrial park. And the train tracks that are in our industrial park were laid down long ago by the Army, because this was the Benicia Arsenal originally. It closed in 1964. And the train tracks were left in place, and businesses came in, including the refinery, establishing themselves, some using the rail spurs. But the way that these rail tracks were laid out, the circulation is very poor. They took out what were the loops that the Army had built that make train access more fluent for their uses, so that they could easily get trains in and out of the arsenal. As the industrial park developed later on, they got rid of those loops, and so you have single lines going, you know, linear trackage like side rails, etc., some of which go right through the refinery property to move trains around. So Union Pacific, we envision a real big problem in a very tight area for these trains to get in and out safely and cross through one of our major intersections in the industrial park where all kinds of people and trucks, et cetera, pass through every day. Mm-hmm. And so local traffic, even if you didn't have a catastrophic accident, you've got the problem of daily traffic backups that may even back up on freeway off-ramps onto I-680. So we have many ways in which to discuss the problems of this project as they pose to, you know, routine business in our industrial park, as well as the threat of a major accident.
Right. Now, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to Community Focus here on KCBC. I'm John Yazel, and we're speaking with Marilyn Barnett. She's with the Benicians for a Safe and Healthy Community, and we're discussing a proposal of an expansion at the Valero Refinery in Benicia, where they would be hauling in more of this oil train, oil by train. Is that, am I getting the terminology
crude by
right?
Rail.
Crude by rail. Now, you guys recently put together a letter to Governor Brown, and I'd like, if you don't mind, I'm going to read some of the points that you put in this letter without going through the entire long detail. Now, did you guys put this, just so my listeners know, on your website, saferbenicia.org or safebenicia.org?
I believe it's there.
Okay. Now, you wrote this in June, and we'll just go through the bullet points. This memorandum summarizes the concerns of the Benicians for a Safe and Healthy Community as described in the attachments to the letter addressed to the governor. Now, numerous expansion projects have been proposed by the oil industry in the Bay Area as part of a statewide plan to move by rail enormous amounts of unusually volatile and dangerous fossil fuel products. So if you're listening today, we're not just talking about Benicia here. There are plans to expand the Richmond Chevron refinery, the Phillips 66 Santa Maria refinery, and this means that this would increase rail traffic of this crude by rail, oil by rail, through Sacramento, Davis, Roseville, Pittsburgh, Berkeley, Richmond, Oakland, Hayward, Fremont, San Jose, and all cities in California that basically a train track goes through. And it's just about all of them, especially in the Central Valley, if they start shipping this stuff south to Bakersfield and plants down there. Now, rail transport of Bakken crude and tar sands crude has already begun, and communities even have plans for expansion of such imports under the California, what is it, the CEQA review. Now, the goal of the proposed projects is to allow exponentially increased transport of rail and dangerous forms of imported crude oil, as well as increased shipments, and I'm paraphrasing now, of gases like LPG, propane, and butane. The U.S. Department of Transportation classifies transport by crude by rail as an imminent hazard. So even the Department of Transportation recognizes this as a hazard. And
right.
there's not a lot of things going on to prepare ourselves for this.
Well, one of the big problems, now that the Department of Transportation in Washington is alerted to the vast changes going on that people are all across the country are alarmed about, they are now proposing to promulgate new rules that would govern rail safety. And the trouble is, these rules take a long time to evolve, and everybody pitches in about them, including the rail industry and the refining industry, lobbyists. So quite quickly, the kinds of things that are being proposed could be watered down, for one thing. And right now, the standards that are being touted as safer are all voluntary, being recommended by the railroad industry itself, you know, that they would retire DOT 111 tank cars, which they're now calling legacy DOT 111s, and instead substitute another kind of tank car with a bit stronger, the thicker steel mm-hmm. and headers and valve pressure releases on the top, et cetera, et cetera. These 1232s are touted as being safer. And then that's true in our environmental impact report we're reviewing right now for the Valero project. Valero is claiming that it will use only 1232s as though this is going to address the safety issue. But the problem is the 1232s have not been proven safe at regular speeds to prevent the same kind of puncture and disasters that have occurred with DOT 111s. And that's been shown, proven with evidence in Lynchburg, Virginia. This year, April 30th, a train going into Lynchburg, crossing a trestle bridge, derailed, and several cars, and these were 1232s, several cars tumbled into the James River, catching fire and exploding and causing spillage into the river. So there is no proof so far that the 1232s are any better. And they are only a stopgap measure because the government, DOT, has not yet defined what the new design for a car in the future will look like. And, of course, the rail industry, those that build the cars, would be probably thrilled to think of retiring 97,000 DOT 111s off the rails. That's a figure that is an approximate figure. I've heard 92,000 and that 47,000 DOT 111s are carrying crude right now on rails across the country.
Mm-hmm.
So these are all moving targets, these figures. But what we know, when Valero says we promise to use 1232s, we're not exactly reassured.
Right, and I can see why you wouldn't be. Now, as we get into what you guys in the town of Benicia are dealing with this Valero expansion and the environmental impact report, the draft study that's coming out now, the city council has been meeting.
The planning commission.
The planning commission has been meeting, and now you have a meeting coming up. Actually, by the time the show airs, you would have actually already had this meeting. Is public comment open on this yet? I mean, what are the people saying, and what's the environment?
When they first announced that the draft environmental impact report was ready for public comment, they were going to allow us 45 days for a review period. Mind you, it took a year for them to develop the EIR, to write it, the ESA, the consultants. And so we were going to be given 45 days. Well, it's just impossible if you have a real life to be able to address a 1,500-page document with appendices A through L in a 45-day review period. We asked for 90, which is about the maximum you could ask for,
right.
And we were granted it. We had many, many people come to the hearing, the first hearing, to comment and ask for an extension of the review period, and we were granted that, thank God. And so the final day for turning in our comments is September 15th.
Okay.
And we're inviting communities uprail, certainly. We're encouraging Davis, Sacramento, Roseville, and we'd hope Sassoon, Fairfield, and everybody else up and down rail to send in comments on the Valero project to our city that is acting as lead agent on the review. And, of course, the job in a CEQA review is to determine the adequacy of the document itself. It's not just simply to reject the project. It is to recommend changes both to the document and to the project that would mitigate the kinds of hazards we can anticipate. And I might add there that the other huge concern is that they are importing a kind of extreme crudes, that is, Bakken crude and tar sands, which have vastly different specific characteristics that when processed. So then we talk about local air emissions that would potentially increase with consequences of refining on a daily basis these kinds of crudes. You know, tar sands is full of heavy metals and produces a lot of pet coke, petroleum coke, and we would be worried, I should say, about whether tar sands, which is so acidic and sour that it could produce more corrosion in pipes, and depending on maintenance schedules, et cetera, you could have the kind of rupture, pipe rupture, that we saw at Chevron on August 6th, 2012, when people discovered, workers discovered a seam, a weld that was coming apart, and tried to repair it while the refinery was still, you know, on. The processing units were not turned off, and the pipe exploded and caused major damage to a key processing unit and sent 15,000 people seeking medical attention. We never forgot that one, being that we could anticipate possibly processing more sour crude, and including from tar sands, at our Benicia refinery.
Wow. And so the mood at City Hall, we discussed it earlier, is kind of the economic impact is going to kind of overshadow what the environmental impact would be. Is that kind of what you're going through?
Well, that's a very good point you're making, because what happens with these environmental reviews, and we've seen this happen before in Benicia, the community may oppose the project or reject the certification of an EIR. Let's say it's approved by the Planning Commission or the City Council on Appeal. Let us say that the project, the document, the final EIR receives approval. The project could then go forward if the project document for the environmental review has major flaws but is anyway certified by the city. It can be done by what they call overriding considerations, and usually those are economic considerations. Mm. So we would have to say we do not believe it is right to put corporate profit-making ahead of community health and safety for our community into the future. And we would have to reject overriding considerations, and we'd probably end up in court, very likely, if that were the case. I mean, the damage that can be done to a community that has a major accident that other people, you know, other companies perceive, et cetera, et cetera. Who's going to want to move to our industrial park should we have a major accident here?
Right, right.
And knowing that our city government accepted such a project.
Right. That would not be good in the long term. Recently, we've been seeing a lot more stories in the news about this because the governor gets involved. He puts together this, you know, somewhat small task force earlier in the year to kind of look at it. It was called the Interagency Rail Safety Working Group. And then
Right. Your
letter to the governor, has this been responded to, this letter that you sent to the governor? And if so, what was the response?
Well, that's an interesting question. I helped author that letter. It was vetted by many people. And when we sent it off, we sent copies to every member of the state legislature. And I have not, our group has not heard back from anyone directly in writing.
And this has been 2 months now.
Yes.
Wow.
And we are told always to write to our government and tell the government what we think and what our hopes are. And we feel we wrote a very positive letter and gave even examples of the kinds of things we believe the governor and his authority could do. For instance, call for a moratorium until we know what the rules will be that will, in the future, govern rail safety that are not yet in place. In fact, we realize now that we can't expect to hear back from government. I think we hear circuitously that they are trying to do something, but it seems to me they're talking about how to handle emergencies after they've happened. You know, do we have enough emergency response protocols in place? Do we have enough funding for the kinds of equipment needed to be able to supply rural communities with protection if such an accident should occur? But I'm concerned that we prevent the accidents in the first place,
or
prevent these kinds of torturous things from going on. But I do think it is a sign of the times. We are in between a rock and a hard place, as many people in the industry would describe. They feel it too. And this is the conundrum we're in as a nation, as a civilization, about what direction we're headed. And given that we all share the air, and we're pumping, our part of it is we're pumping gases into the air that are affecting long-term the climate for future generations. So that is our problem.
Right.
That is the enigma.
Right. Now, Marilyn, unfortunately, we've run out of time here, and you guys are, you know, you got a lot going on, and we want people listening today that are concerned about this issue to read what you guys have printed, read more about this, get themselves educated, and make sure that they get involved with what their communities are doing if they're trying to, you know, at least get some regulation on this stuff before a big disaster happens. So why don't we give people your website, websites they can look at for more information, maybe a telephone number or contact or anything like
yes,
that if they want to help you out.
The best is to go to safebenicia.org for local news about what activities or of things that are coming up, hearings, etc. A great deal of information, the best source for independent information collated in one place is the BeniciaIndependent.com. And BeniciaIndependent.com is a website that puts out news about crude by rail that's coming from all over the country and is up to date and with archived information. It's a wonderful source for researching the latest news. You know, we're talking about a moving target, and BeniciaIndependent.com presents very objectively all of the news that's coming out about crude by rail across the country, and that affects the way we critique the Valero crude by rail project.
All right. Well, Marilyn Bardet with the Benicians for a Safe and Healthy Community, I really appreciate your time. Good luck in the battle, and we'll keep you on the speed dial to find out what's going on in the future. Thanks for coming on Community Focus.
Thank you so much.
Well, unfortunately, that's all the time we have for this week's show. If you'd like to contact me, you can do so via email, right? CommunityFocus@CrawfordBroadcasting.com. Again, that's CommunityFocus@CrawfordBroadcasting.com. Or if you want to use the regular U.S. mail, you can write Community Focus, care of KCBC, 10948 Cleveland Avenue, Oakdale, California, 95361. And you can also find all that contact information online at 770kcbc.com. Just click that Community Focus link. You've been listening to Community Focus here on KCBC. I'm your host, John Yazel. I appreciate you tuning in, and I will talk to you next week. God bless.